You're listening to Classical Music here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. I'm your host for this hour, Matt Jackfert. Joining me this hour is world-renowned pianist who calls West Virginia her home, Barbara Nisman. Barbara, welcome to the show.
Oh, it's nice to talk to you, Matt. Thank you.
Yeah. So you were born and raised in Philadelphia, but later moved to the Mountain State. What brought you to this area?
Well, actually, I spent 10 years in Europe starting my career, and then I came back to the States and met my late husband, and we were looking for a place to live where you could put a poet and a pianist together, and that meant a big old farmhouse with two studios, and we came down the East Coast, and neither one of us had ever been to West Virginia, but we discovered how beautiful the state is and how wonderful the people were, and actually we fell in love with it and finally found a beautiful place in Lewisburg, and I'm still here, and I love being a West Virginian.
That's great. Well, of course, all West Virginians welcome you here, and yeah, there's a lot to be drawn in about. Beautiful scenery, probably a lot to be inspired by an artist, right?
Actually, you know, I sit at my studio at my piano, and I look out the window and look at the mountains, and that's enough for me.
Yeah.
It really is an inspiration. Of course, it's a wonderful place for me to work, and I still travel, of course, but it's so nice to share what I do with the people here, too.
Right, yeah, and so you're able to still get around and do international concerts, even though, you know, you live in a somewhat small community of Lewisburg. Can you explain how you get out and about and do those sort of things?
Well, actually, the only complaint I have, I wish we had more direct flights, but other
yes.
than that, it means I have to either travel from Lewisburg to your airport in Charleston, but that's a minor consideration. No, it's very easy for me to travel from here, and people don't know what we have here in West Virginia. I think that's they don't know what a lovely place it is to live. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And the sort of peaceful quietness of the state is probably very
nice. And, you know, artists need that when they're preparing what we do on the stage. I mean, when we go on the stage, everybody thinks, oh, it's easy and you don't need to practice. But that practice time is very important, and that sense of discovery and then rediscovery when you pull out a work and then you start looking at it a second time or a third time. The environment here is so perfect for that. It really is.
Yeah. And so you have an upcoming concert as part of the Charleston Chamber Music Society's 74th concert season. And it's going to be 7 p.m. March 12th at Christ Church United Methodist on Courier Street. Barbara, could you tell us a little bit about this concert and what you'll be doing?
Well, you know, this is the first time I'm playing for the Chamber Music Society.
Oh.
And I've chosen a wonderful program of pieces I love. Of course, I only play pieces I love.
Of course.
And I'm doing some Prokofiev, and actually the first piece Prokofiev ever wrote that he gave an opus number to. And, of course, when I do these programs, I always introduce the music and chat with my audience and kind of guide the listener. And it makes the music so much more relevant to them. It connects them with the music. So I'm opening with the Prokofiev, and then I'm doing Schubert, a beautiful impromptu, and then following that with the Wanderer Fantasy, which is a terrific work. And then after the interval, I'll do some Rachmaninoff preludes, and then Gina Stera. And now Gina Stera is a composer whom I was lucky enough to have met when I was at university. In fact, he wrote his last composition for me, and we're marking his 100th birthday next month.
Wow.
So I thought I should play some Gina Stera and introduce the public to his well-known sonata. And then I end the program with Liszt, whom I really love.
Wow.
And I love talking about Liszt, and everybody loves to hear Liszt music.
Yeah, and he was such a
showman. So it should be a wonderful program.
Let's take a short break and listen to Barbara Nisman performing Consolation No. 3 in D-flat major by Franz Liszt.
Thank you.
That was Barbara Nisman performing Consolation No. 3 in D-flat major by Franz Liszt. We're listening to an interview by Barbara Nisman. So you have a sort of connection with Prokofiev. As I read, you were the first pianist to perform the complete piano sonatas. What sparked this sort of connection with this Russian composer?
Well, you know, Prokofiev is a continuation, in my mind, of Liszt. And the way he wrote for the piano, he built on that wonderful pianism of Liszt, but of course was such an original, and he added his own character and personality to what he did. In my mind, he's the probably the best composer for the piano to come out of the 20th century. And I just love his music, and it's really not played that often except for the War Horses. So it's been fun to spread the word about Prokofiev. In fact, I was just at LSU in Baton Rouge. I was the guest artist at an international symposium for him, and I was there with the Prokofiev family, and it was 4 days just talking and playing Prokofiev. So it was really terrific.
So that sounds like your sort of heaven, huh?
Yeah, it was. It was fun.
Yeah, that sounds great. Well, so have you recorded a lot of Prokofiev? Have you?
Well, I was the first pianist to record all the sonatas for CD, and my recordings are still out there with all the major works and the sonatas, and so that really sparked the interest, and also there was no recording on CD available at that time. And of course, then they branded me as a Prokofiev specialist, which I think of myself more as a product of the 19th century, but that's fine. So I do play a lot of Prokofiev with orchestra, but I play everything, Matt, you know.
Well, good. Yeah, I mean, it should be good to be able to branch out and be able to do anything that is thrown your way. Do you have any other sort of composers that you feel a deep connection with?
Well, it's funny how we get branded. I was branded with Gene Astera because he was the first composer I made recorded, and he wrote his last composition for me, so they said I was a specialist in his music.
Let's take a short break and listen to Barbara Nisman performing Alberto Gene Astera, his Danzas Argentinas. Thank you. Was Barbara Nisman performing Alberto Ginastera's Danzas Argentinas, a two-movement work. We're listening to an interview with Barbara Nisman. So what sort of projects are you working on now?
Now I'm working on this wonderful DVD about Liszt. So hopefully, you know, they've branded me that way too, but he's my current guy in my life. And this DVD is very exciting because it's an audiovisual textbook. And so we have a complete biography of him with voiceovers, and then it's a masterclass on the sonata. And we have Michael York doing the voice of Liszt and Billy Joel doing the voice of Chopin and
this
wonderful
sounds cool.
cast of characters.
And this is
Don Henley of the Eagles doing Brahms.
So wow.
It's been great fun putting together.
And this is in a DVD that...
Yes, and we're hoping, Matt, we can get it out by October.
Okay.
By Liszt's birthday, his 205th birthday in October.
And what's this going to be called, this sort of special?
Well, it's called Franz Liszt, Portrait of the Man and His Masterwork, the Sonata in B minor.
Great. Well, we look forward to that in October. So I want to jump back a little bit.
Sure.
Your international career was launched personally by Eugene Dormady of the Philadelphia Orchestra. So how did that come about? Must have really helped to have someone from so high up in the art world vouching for you.
You know, that was just an act of providence, I think. I was finishing up my doctorate at the University of Michigan, and the Philadelphia Orchestra, which happens to be my hometown orchestra anyway, but they always used to come to Ann Arbor for the May Festival. And it just so happened that... Ormandy was at a luncheon with one of the regents of the university who said, oh, there's a young woman here who's really talented, and you should really hear her. So Ormandy said, well, let me hear her now. So they went and got me. I was in the practice room, and they said, you better go home and change because in 15 minutes you're playing for Ormandy.
Oh, so, my gosh.
It was like a Cinderella story, Matt, because I still don't know how I did that audition because he was yelling, well, play the cadenza from the Tchaikovsky first, play the cadenza from the Rachmaninoff third. So then he got excited and took me to his European manager who really put together my first European tour, and that's really the way I started my career.
Yeah.
And then luckily and fortunately, he then engaged me to make my American debut with him and his orchestra. So it was really very, you know, it was very special and kind of an act of heaven.
Yeah, that sounds incredible. How old were you when that happened?
Well, I was just finishing my doctorate, so I was 24 years old. And And incidentally, it turned out that when I did my first concert tour in Europe, it happened to be my first trip to Europe, and then I ended up living there for the next 10 years because, in a way, I was like the American opera singer who went over to Europe for all their experience because there were so many orchestras there. For instance, in Holland, a little country that at that time, they had like 28 orchestras. So if they engaged you for one concert, you would always, you know, do runouts with them. So you would have like five consecutive concerts. And then they didn't wait to engage you like 10 years later. They would then engage you the next year and say, well, how do you do this concerto? So yeah. It was a wonderful way for a young artist to really build a career.
Wow, that sounds great. And you lived in different countries in those 10 years?
Yes, actually, I was based for a while in Amsterdam, and then I did a lot of work in England, so I was based in London because I started doing some television work over there. So it was really wonderful, and then I was touring all over. But at a certain point, you know, I think I made the decision, well, I haven't yet played in New York, and I didn't want to be that American expatriate who spend the rest of their life living in Europe, so I decided to come back and build my American career, which I did. And then I met my husband a year later, so then that kind of changed a lot in my life.
And what year did you then move to West Virginia?
Actually, we moved here in September 89.
Wow. That's, yeah.
What, so it's been a while, right?
Yeah, so that's enough time to be certainly a true
West Virginia. And I keep loving it even more, good. So that's the good news.
Yeah. Well, I was so surprised when I got your number. It was a 304 number, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. And so one of our own here with...
Well, you know, Matt, I have to share with you, this past week I was touring with our Commissioner of Culture and History, Randall Reed Smith, and our First Lady, Joanne Tomlin, and we're touring West Virginia, giving concerts to high school students and sharing what I do with them, and it was really fun. I mean, I got to see more of the state than I've ever seen. All of us had lots of fun, and you know our First Lady studied classical piano for 15 years. So.
Oh, well, that's nice.
It really, it was a wonderful thing we all did together.
Yeah, well, we're going to have to hear you in concert here coming up on March 12th at 7 p.m. at Christ Church United Methodist in Charleston. Barbara, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, it's been a pleasure chatting with you, Matt. Thank you.